Hi everyone, welcome to our Suffolk Babies podcast. Today we're going to be talking sleep, infant sleep. So in this podcast, we'll not only try and give you some of the science, but we'll also give you some of our own insights and hopefully some supportive advice as well that might help everyone deal a little bit better with your child's sleep or lack of it in many cases. We'll go through a few educational bits and pieces all about how infants sleep. We'll also talk a little bit about some of the myths around infant sleep, what is and isn't true, and then we'll talk a little bit about sleep regressions as well. It is without doubt our most frequently discussed topic, isn't it, Joe? Basically because we think it's one of the main things that most parents struggle with, if we're really honest.
Absolutely. I think that we don't understand infant sleep at all, or the science of infant sleep. We accept that newborns are not going to sleep very much. That's very socially acceptable, isn't it? You know, newborns aren't going to sleep. It's like they're not going to be sleeping through the night. But in fact, young children don't sleep the same way as adults. So when we're talking about infant sleep, I think it's really important to remember that infancy as a phase lasts until at least 3 years old. So when we discuss infant sleep and early infancy is 0 to 18 months, and infancy as a whole lasts until they're 3 years old. So so we're not looking at trying to get a good sleep pattern in place by the time they're 12 weeks. That's completely unrealistic.
And also, we know that baby sleep is not linear, is it? It doesn't start off bad and then get increasingly better as sort of the weeks and the months go by. It's very up and down, isn't it?
Yeah, and Sarah Ockwell Smith always refers to infant sleep being like a roller coaster, doesn't she? Which is completely the shape that you know, kind of graph takes if we look at infant sleep. There are times when infant sleep might be really, really good in the first year to 18 months, and other times where it's just terrible. And that is not related to, the increasing age of your child at all. There are various points in their development where infant sleep is going to be really, really patchy, and that's just life, I'm afraid.
Those of us who have had children know that just when you think, oh, I think we've got this, it will change.
And this is the true of children of any age, you know. This is an ever-changing, ever-moving situation. No matter how old they are.
There's so much conflicting information about infant sleep out there. What is and isn't normal, what we should and shouldn't be doing to encourage it. So I think it's really useful for us to kind of just go through some of the facts to help people not to have to grapple with, well, what's right and what isn't right.
I think that we need to acknowledge that sleep is a biological thing. It's not behaviour. It's not something that can be trained into a baby. So no matter what kind of method you are looking at, whether they are these so-called, you know, gentle sleep methods or timetabling methods and things like that, sleep training is a fundamentally flawed concept, because you can't train a hormonal reaction into a human body. Sleep is reliant on the release of a set of hormones which are linked to your circadian rhythm, your understanding of night and day. You can't train that into a body. Sleep also requires sleep deficit, which is how tired you are. And sleep deficit is going to change according to growth, wellness, how busy you've been the day before, all of these different things. So these things are not, you know, they're not something that you can train your baby to do. It is a set of biological factors.
And I think it's also worth remembering as well, we talk about sleep deficit and you say how busy you've been, but for very young babies, overstimulation, having done too much in the day, can actually cause sleep issues, can't it? It's not that they're going to be so tired that they'll just instantly fall asleep. The opposite is true, in fact.
Yeah. Oh, you know what it's like, Mel. You know, those times when you're desperately trying to get a presentation or a project or something finished, you finally get that chance to maybe grab a couple of hours sleep before you have to do it, you know, present it. And you're lying there, you know, physically shaking, absolutely wired, because you are too tired to sleep. And everyday life is very much like that for a newborn, you know, kind of like that transition from womb to world is daunting, it's overwhelming. And so, absolutely. If they become overtired and overstimulated, it's going to affect their nighttime sleep. So it's very much of a fact with a newborn baby, a young baby, sleep during the day means more sleep at night.
Yeah. Yeah, the more rested they are, the better. You don't have to wear them out to the point of exhaustion. Actually, that might cause you more problems then.
You're given completely contradictory advice on that by parents of older children, because when we think about sleep with our young children, we remember toddlerhood, where there is such a thing as a danger nap, where if they sleep at 3:30 in the afternoon, you know they're going to be with you till 11 at night. And that is what, it's the fear of that situation that I think leads parents of older children to give inaccurate advice to mothers of newborns. I think we have to accept that for a very young baby, and when I say a young baby, we're looking at babies that are, you know, 10 months and younger. That's a young baby. So we have to accept that every baby is different. Every baby is going to have a varying need for sleep. Some babies need loads of sleep, some don't need very much, and that's probably going to be related to how much sleep you need yourself. So, you know, my children were all non-sleepers, but maybe that's because I don't need an awful lot of sleep either. I think yours are the same, aren't they, Mel? So if you are not a huge sleeper yourself, your children are unlikely to biologically need a huge amount of sleep, unfortunately. So every baby is going to be different, and every day is going to be different, because the amount of activity in every day is different. The amounts of, you know, growing they're doing in a 24-hour period is different, whether or not they are kind of unwell or teething, or they've had their jabs, or they're going through a phase of neural pathway development, or they've got a sudden interest in trying to sit up or crawl, or they're having a spurt of language development. All of these things that we might not be aware of when we just sit and have a look at them and go, why aren't you tired? You know, we don't know what else is going on in that massive, complex, evolving brain. All of these things are going to affect how much they're going to sleep. And we have to react to sleep as I think we would to food, you know, in a lot of ways. We don't dispute, do we, if our baby suddenly decides it's hungry when we weren't expecting it. We just deal with it. We meet that need. And sleep should be looked on as exactly the same as feeding.
A good lead into talking about sleep regressions when we talk about developmental things that are happening. And in most cases, when we talk about sleep regressions, so a period of time where sleep may get dramatically worse from what you're used to, a lot of the time it can be attributed to these big milestones, hitting some of these big milestones.
Yeah. And the classic ones are around 4 months, between 4 and 6 months, and between 8 and 10 months. And then there's another one sometime around 2. And so it's about mobility often, or any kind of new skill, or just emerging neural pathway development, or spurts of language development as well. And when, you know, these things are happening, it absolutely does disrupt your baby's sleep. And that's daytime sleep as well as nighttime sleep, isn't it, Mel? It's really, really difficult. And it's, we don't expect it. So it takes us completely by surprise. And it's not socially acceptable. People think that by 8 to 10 months, if you've got a good baby who's well behaved, then they will be sleeping in a predictable fashion. But biologically, it's never going to happen.
I think it's also worth remembering that not everyone has the same experience. So not every child will go through the 4-month sleep regression or the next one.
They absolutely won't go through it in the same way. No, you're quite right. It's going to be what is disturbed sleep for one baby might be really fantastic for another. I don't actually even remember the 4-month sleep regression with my children, because they really didn't sleep very much at night anyway. So actually, the disruption didn't seem to be kind of like really that bad.
And just because your child went through a sleep regression at one point doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to go or hit a really huge sleep regression at the next general time when they happen either. You can't kind of predict it in that way, can you?
No, you can't. And I think the thing is, but we're not saying this is definitely going to happen, this is going to be really, really bad, brace yourself now. That's not what we're saying at all. We're just saying if you do find there is suddenly a dramatic change and you're not entirely sure why, it's worth thinking, oh, this could be a blip due to development. And all it is a blip. It doesn't mean it's a permanent change in behavior. It just means it's a blip and there's something else going on in your baby's life and things will return to something that you consider to be more normal given time. But the most important thing is don't change anything. Don't see that blip as a reason to suddenly change the way that you parent. Because actually any change during a blip is probably the worst thing that you can do. You need consistency at that point.
And a really good thing to remember is the blip is nothing that you've done wrong. It's not that your child is being badly behaved. It is developmental, isn't it? There is nothing essentially that you can do about it. So don't try and stress about changing it.
Yeah, don't seek the solution. Just, you know, kind of keep everything as consistent as you can, because sleep regressions are normally about huge change happening internally. They're about your baby developing a sudden new awareness. And again, you know, a lot of theorists write about how, you know, these massive surges in neural pathway development and this increasing awareness of the world around them are very much like us, you know, suddenly getting off a plane in the middle of a foreign land somewhere. And being, you know, experiencing a huge culture clash, experiencing a massive, you know, massively different sensorial experience in that environment, you know, different temperature, different smells, different language, everything suddenly being completely foreign to us. And if that's what's happening to our baby at this huge kind of pivotal point in their development, the last thing they want is more change from what they consider to be their safe base, their source of total consistency, their key people in their lives, their parents. So it's up to us to be the constant in this ever-changing world.
And I think it's also worth just having a quick chat as well about routines, because sleeping routines do essentially come together in the minds of many people, don't they? We think if we get our babies into good sleep routines, then that will help them to sleep better and sleep longer. But we just need to be mindful of when routines or what schedules versus routines look like, and when they're appropriate as well.
I think this is one of those moments where the enormous marketing machine of the commercial baby world has taken over, because actually routines aren't a bad thing. Routines, what is a routine? A routine is a set of actions which are repeated. I have a bedtime routine. I bet you do as well. You know, you kind of think, right, I'm tired.
It's short.
Yeah, that's very short. I'm tired now. I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to get a glass of water. I'm going to, you know, take my makeup off if I can still face it, if I've managed to put any on. Okay. Clean my teeth and get into my pajamas and go to bed. That's my bedtime routine. It might vary by hours. It might vary, but depending on everything that's going on around me, how much I've got to do, how tired I am. But, you know, it could vary by hours, but pretty much it's going to be the same pattern of events before I do then go to bed. I don't suddenly think, oh, it's 10 o'clock. I must be tired now. I normally am, but I must be tired now. Now is the time I must sleep because the clock says it's 10. And that is the thing. That's where we get confused, because I kind of think we often think, right, 7 o'clock, baby should be in bed now. And that isn't the driving force. The time has got nothing to do with when your baby is likely to experience tiredness. Mm. It is a matter of watching your baby for those signs that they have had enough of the day and it is time for them to go to bed. And then when you see those signs, thinking, right, now what do we do? Change a nappy, change into the bedtime clothes, have a nice cozy feed, you know, maybe sitting on your bed, lie your baby down next to you, soothe them until they fall asleep. That's a lovely bedtime routine for a young baby. Mm. Or stand and sway with them until they fall asleep. Mm. It's those repetitive actions that are going to matter. That's how they're going to recognise it's bedtime. Babies can't tell the time. They don't even have a concept of time until they're six.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And if people struggle to get their children to sleep at set times in the day because they're trying to follow a schedule, that does give an indication as to why that is. Because maybe your baby isn't tired yet, or maybe things just aren't aligned for them to go to sleep at that moment in time. And you're right, that's why sort of these schedules can be quite dangerous, can't they? Because they actually put more pressure on you as a parent. And I know firsthand, babies do get into that kind of rhythm, into that sort of schedule that you would read about maybe, you know, when they're over 6 months old, you get down to the 3 naps and then you get down to the 2 naps. And all the books that say naps at 9:30 or 10, then naps at 12:30 or 1, then another nap, you know, if you're doing 3 naps in the afternoon, and you think, oh, I must follow that schedule. But even without following those books, your baby's sleep will actually naturally arrive at those patterns without you having to put the time on the clock.
Exactly. Your baby will do that. And you know what? Some mums read those books and find their babies automatically doing it. And they think, oh, brilliant. I've done this routine. It's fantastic. This book's really, really good. But actually, your baby was probably just doing it anyway.
Yeah.
And the reason, you know, that we think that we need to rely on these books is because there's this really powerful marketing message out there promising us that the book's the solution. And in fact, it's just that somebody is making some royalties off that sale. You don't have to work towards setting those patterns at all. You just have, what you need to do is work towards spotting the cues for tiredness. That is the key thing, and those are different for every baby. But as a golden rule, there are some key ones, aren't there? So we know when our babies are tired because they get those red rings around their eyes, they get red eyebrows, they might get blotchy patches on their face and on their skin. They often look away and stop making eye contact with you. They often hiccup. This is a really confusing one because you get so many people who go, oh, my baby's hiccuping all the time after I've had a feed, because they're tired. And it's nothing to do with wind. They're tired. But why would you think hiccups is a sign of tiredness? You know, it's not surprising that's misinterpreted. Jerky movement, crying, vomiting, that can be another sign of tiredness. So, and it's about sort of like spotting that pattern in your baby, because some babies do all of them, some do only a couple. Some give you loads of warning and are really laid back and give you lots and lots of warning to act on it. Some might get a slightly pink eyebrow and then erupt a nanosecond later. So it all becomes about your individual baby and their personality and getting to know them, and then thinking, right, I've seen that sign. I now need to get my baby to sleep. And I know, Mel, that, you know, you and Theo have got a really unique way of getting to sleep. I can remember witnessing the travel squat moment and I was so impressed.
My children have both loved squatting in stairs.
Yeah, but I'm sure that's because you did so much of that during pregnancy with all the PT classes while you were still very pregnant. My babies, it was always kind of like in a sling and then having to walk along a farm track with a dog. You know, it was kind of like the outside air and that, like, they could even tell when I was just going round and round the kitchen because it was raining and I didn't want to go outside. They knew. They absolutely knew. So yeah, it has to be outside on a farm track somewhere.
Another really good lead into something I think is important for us to talk about, and that's to debunk some of these myths around habits with sleep, bad habits with sleep, and how that will affect, and how you mustn't do this and you mustn't do that. The big ones. So you shouldn't feed your baby to sleep or hold your baby to sleep. It's going to cause you massive problems in the long run. Just not true, is it, Jo?
No, it's absolutely not true. So babies, to just completely scrap all of it. Babies don't have habits. Babies have needs. That's all they have. There are no habits. There are only needs. And it's up to us as a parent to meet those needs. So you can't develop a habit until you have a memory. And you don't have any memory. Think about when are your first memories? They're not until like 3 or 4, absolute earliest. So you can't really have habits until well past, you know, into late toddlerhood. So habits are a myth. They're a complete myth. Your baby only knows when they feel safe and secure and all their needs are met. If all of their needs aren't met, then they're not going to settle. And it's as simple as that. And let's acknowledge emotional reassurance as being a need. It is a need. I need emotional reassurance. You need emotional reassurance. Adults need it as well. We don't settle well to sleep at night if we're upset, you know, and it's a completely valid reason to need your parents, needing that emotional support. And that is very much part of being a responsive parent with good attachment to your child. So let's not think of emotional reassurance as being an invalid reason to attend to your baby. So,
yeah. And I will say now, feeding to sleep, actually, if you are breastfeeding, I feed Theo to sleep now and he is coming up to 1. Do you know what? It's a damn sight easier than any other way to get him to sleep. So if it works, I'm going to do it. And I think that's important to remember too. If it works, then carry on doing it, because it makes it easier and more calm for you and for your baby.
Yeah, definitely. And what you're doing as well, just through that kind of feeding to sleep and creating that lovely cozy environment, is you're creating a really perfect biochemical environment for your baby's brain development. You know, the hippocampus, this side of the brain that we use for so many different things, is absolutely linked or negative hormonal situations like heightened cortisol levels through stress are linked to a reduced development of neural pathways in the hippocampus. So we want to absolutely make sure that our babies do not experience the stress that they will experience if they're feeling upset, unhappy, they're dealing with separation anxiety. We don't want them to experience any of those things. We want them to be calm. We want them to be cozy. We want them to know that mummy is always there.
So holding your baby to sleep is also fine. And let's also just reiterate that for very young babies, for newborns, they won't like being put down anyway, will they?
No, of course they won't. They want to be back inside the uterus. You know, really, like they spend the first 3 months wishing they could climb back in. I'm absolutely convinced they just want that perfectly consistent world. And so the first 3 months really are about just acclimatizing to living in that world outside the uterus. And the closer they can get to it, think of yourself as being pregnant, but the baby's on the other side of your skin. And so your baby will want to sleep on your chest. Your baby will want to sleep beside you. Your baby will sleep beautifully in a sling. What they probably won't do is sleep on their own in a Moses basket. And that is normal. And I'd say to anyone who is struggling with that right now, absolutely, please make contact with us, because there's so much that we can do to make sure you can create a safe sleeping environment for you and your baby that will mean that you can both get some rest. Because although holding a sleeping baby is really lovely, mums and dads have needs too. So you need to find a sustainable way to be able to create a good sleeping environment for a new baby, but also meet your own needs.
We just want to again go over the facts that we know about attachment, and that being responsive is not a bad thing either. So when you get, or if you get people coming up to you saying, oh, you know, you shouldn't jump up to attention every time, or you should, you know, you can just leave them to have a little whinge in bed, it's fine. And what we know about attachment is actually being responsive is not a bad thing. It's actually essential.
It really, really is. There's all those phrases, isn't there? I mean, you can make a rod for your own back, you're spoiling that baby. You know, all of these, you've got to leave them to cry so they learn to self-soothe. That's my favorite. These things are outdated, actually dangerous pieces of parenting advice. And I know that I'm really probably over frank about this, but they are dangerous bits of advice. When you look at the implications on attachment with your child, and attachment is so important. It's the foundation stone of how your baby views the entire world. It's going to affect their, not only their brain development, but their physical development, their wellness in later life. We know that less securely attached children tend to suffer from more childhood illnesses. It's been proven. There's clinically based studies that show us this. We know that children who grow up and have had insecure attachment are more predisposed to mental health issues and to type 2 diabetes and to heart problems and to obesity and to anxiety-led diseases as well. So, you know, these are long-term health implications because of a lack of attachment in infancy. And this is something that we are still studying now. There was a landmark study in the year 2000 about the health outcomes for less securely attached children, but it's something that's being studied all the time. It's something that is not widely understood by previous generations. So it's not something that's taken into account when people give parenting advice, but it is a very, very real issue. But unfortunately, secure attachment doesn't also marry terribly well with that, you know, horrendously massive marketing machine that governs our baby world. Because the best thing you can do is hold your baby and be responsive to your baby. We can't sell you a solution to creating a great attachment.
And that often manifests itself around sleep time, doesn't it? Around naps and sleep, unfortunately. I think it's probably also a good thing at this point, Jo, to just give all our listeners some top tips, if we can, about how to deal with sleep deprivation, because, you know, it is a very real thing. We do all experience it at some point in time with our children. And it can be, when you're in the depths of it, very difficult to sort of get some perspective and find some ways to really help you deal with it. But I think there are some things that we know work. Everyone will find their own individual things that help them get through the day to day as well. But there are generally some things that we would recommend that you do.
Yeah, there are. I think the number one thing that we spoke about last week is acceptance. Yeah. I think that if we focus on how, and this is where you need to throw that Fitbit away right now, because I think if you focus constantly on how you've only had, you know, these few hours of sleep in the last 24, it's going to make you feel worse, without a doubt. So rather than looking at the clock and working out how sleep deprived you are, just accept that, you know, this, and it's so much easier said than done, but just accept this is your reality right now. And no, you haven't had a lot of sleep, but you're going to make the best out of that day anyway. And if the opportunity presents to lie down with your baby a bit later on in the day, you're going to take it. You don't have to wait until 9 o'clock tomorrow night, you know, to go back to bed.
I actually did. We had a clock in our bedroom because when we started off, I really wanted, in my head, I felt like I wanted to know what time Theo was waking up. But I soon realized that was actually causing me a lot more stress, because every time he'd wake up, I'd look at the clock and go, oh, it's only been an hour. And it would really make me very stressed. Whereas when we took away the clock and I couldn't see how long it had been, even if I'd only had 15 minutes of sleep in the time that he hadn't wake up, that was 15 minutes of sleep that was, you know, for me, not sleep that I was then analyzing. It was just 15 minutes of sleep. So I think whilst we may think that we want to know the timings and we want to write everything down, you know, in our feed books, in our sleep books, and kind of write it all down, actually it's quite detrimental to our mental health.
Constantly overanalyzing how little sleep you had is detrimental to your mental health. And I think that is our tendency, isn't it? And I can remember almost having tired offs with other mums and with other pet, you know, and your partner, you know, and there's nothing worse than when your partner turns around to you and goes, oh, I'm exhausted. And they might well be, but they're not as tired as you. And so the fact that they've had the audacity to complain about being tired, and they haven't, you know, you've heard them snoring through the 8 wake ups that you've done since you last spoke to them. You've heard them, you know, they've also faked sleep when you've been dealing. You know, but they do, don't they? They
all the time. So many times I've gone, how did you sleep through that?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I can just sleep really well.
Yeah. But then they still say, oh, I've just slept really, really well. But actually, they're still going, but I'm so tired. And you're like, not in comparison to me, you're not. And so I think that, you know, there are all these things that are working against our mental health. So try and avoid the tired off. Try and make it like a banned subject. Say, you know, if you need to verbally express that to somebody, make that person not me. Say it to anyone other than me, because I can guarantee I am more tired than you right now. And you don't want it to become, because you just need that support from your partner at that point, don't you? You just need that support just to say, look, you know, carry on chanting to yourself, stay together on it rather than it becoming divisive. So carry on, you know, thinking this phase will pass, you know, write that in lots of places in your house. This will pass, it will get better, you know. So sleep is going to get better. I think the other thing is for stay hydrated. We underestimate hydration, don't we?
Absolutely.
Even when, you know, we kind of like, both you and I, Mel, you know, we both sit there and they go, well, we drink loads of water, but we still also have that time when you're like, I've got a blinding headache. Why do I feel exhausted? And you still get dehydrated without realizing it. So 6 pints of water a day, absolute minimum, I think. Make sure you get that in. I think that's a really, really big one. Mel, tell us about breathing.
Breathing is so important. I mean, I could talk about breathing for all day long, to be honest. But if you are feeling really exhausted, highly stressed, take some really big, deep breaths. And I know it sounds so simple and so many people think, oh, that can't possibly help, but it really does. As Joe, you've explained before, it just really helps to take away some of that adrenaline, calm your whole body down, get some oxygen into your body, oxygenate your body as well. So when we're sleep deprived, the best thing you can do, close your eyes, big deep breaths in through the nose and out through the mouth. And if you can, go and do it outside, even better. That fresh air is going to make such a difference to you as well.
And the daylight, because the daylight convinces you, it tricks your circadian rhythm into thinking that you're more awake than you actually are. So, so daylight is so important for us and the way our bodies function and the way that we feel mentally as well. I think that we also have to pay real attention to what we eat. because, and I'm not saying that you need to be, you know, kind of like completely virtuous and only snack on, you know, nuts and lovely whole grain, you know, fibers and bits and bits. Of course, right. Eat the cake. Absolutely eat the cake. But do remember that when you are just fueling on sugar, you're going to experience crashes.
Yeah.
And those crashes can make you feel a bit rubbish. So get some, you know, slow release stuff in there as well.
Nutrition and hydration, fresh air, deep breathing.
Chanting, this will pass.
Yeah.
All of it whilst chanting your mantra.
Absolutely. Hopefully it's been, again, a useful podcast for people. As Jo said, though, Suffolk Babies can offer so much support to people who are suffering, going through sleep regressions or suffering with their mental health because of sleep deprivation. So please do get in touch. Do use us. We offer a number of workshops, a number of drop-in sessions, etc., that you can use to help talk through what you're experiencing. We can give you you know, some advice and a bit of a boost. But just remember that infant sleep does have its highs and lows. What your baby or child is going through is probably extremely normal, but you're not in it alone either. So there are people that you can talk to and share your experience with if you need to.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Take care, and hopefully we'll speak to you all soon.